As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And hold, riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can none of y'all mirror me back? Yeah, hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm young H.O., rap's great for dead.
Hello and welcome back to Miami Nice, the podcast that's about the 2006 movie Miami Vice. I am Katie Walsh, I'm a film critic, and I'm here with my partner in undercover escapades, Blake Howard, podcast impresario. If you are hearing a ice cream truck, that happens every single day outside my door at this time.
11:17 on a Saturday.
11:17 on a Saturday. We are getting some popsicles, and we have an amazing guest. I'm so excited for our guest today. She is an entertainment writer for Thrillist, one of my favorite Twitter follows. Exhibiting extremely impish behavior, very funny, film Twitter imp and delightful person, Emma Stefanski is here. Welcome, Emma.
Welcome.
Hi.
Emma.
I'm so excited to be a film Twitter imp. I love that.
Katie,
your energy is sort of pan-like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do. I think that the little purple goblin face on like the emojis is like one of my most used all the time. I will just send it to people sometimes. They'll be like, Emma, what are you doing? Something bad.
Yes. Being a little squiggle worm.
Yeah.
Well, we're so excited you're here to talk to us about the movie. And I would love for you to just, I had noticed your Letterboxd review of Miami Vice, which is why I sent you the DM to come on the show. And it was something about telling your cat to like, you know, pay attention every time Colin Farrell's on screen.
Yeah, well, I really wanted him to see like a model of like what he should be in his life. And like, that's sort of why that's, I want my cat
live,
to measure up.
Live, drunk. Mustached.
Good at salsa dancing.
Good at dancing.
Yeah,
he's a role model. He really is a role model for the young people in our lives. But aside from wanting your cat to exhibit Sonny Crockett-like qualities, tell us a little bit about, like, when did you first see this movie? And what was it? What was your initial reaction? Like, what first struck you about this movie?
Well, I first saw it, that very Letterboxd review was my first ever watch of this movie. I had like always, you know, meant to, because I've seen most of Michael Mann's other ones and, I, you know, obviously I really like them. And so Miami Vice was always sort of on my radar, and I'd seen the show and I knew that it was sort of not like the show. Actually, speaking of the show, I just want to point out that I am wearing.
Oh, look at that.
Amazing.
That. A screenshot of Emma's credentials is coming to Twitter very soon for that absolutely boss original Miami Vice TV show t-shirt that she is rocking right now for the show. We love that. Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you for your commitment.
You are committed.
I put it out like last night on the chair. I was like, I can't forget to wear this, even though this is over Zoom, even though it's a podcast, not a visual medium. But yeah, but I'd never seen it until I watched it. When was that? This year? Last year? I don't know. The years are
in the pandemic.
Yeah, it's all one. And I was going through sort of a, I don't know, lonely, horny phase of my life.
Aren't we all?
I mean,
we all,
right?
I think instead of the roaring 20s, the beginning of the 2020s are the snoring 20s, because everyone is just lonely and bored and depressed and potentially horny, and a perfect movie time for Miami Vice viewing.
It's so true. And Colin Farrell's been like one of my guys forever. Like I saw him, I remember watching like Minority Report and just going like, who is this person? Mm. Who's that? So I'd always meant to watch it, and I was going through something at that time. So I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna watch Miami Vice. And I'd actually talked to David Sims, our friend, fellow podcast guy, and he loves this movie, and he kept like telling me like, you have to watch it. And that night I was sort of like, I'm in the mood for it. And he's like, do it right now. Text me while you do it. and so I did, and it was so, and he had told me before that it's like really weird, and I didn't really know what he meant. I was like, sure, I've seen like weird movies before. I think I get it. And I definitely was not prepared for what it is. It is indeed really weird, but I really liked it. And it did, it stayed in my brain, you know, it has stayed in my brain ever since then. I still think about it sometimes. I was just watching it earlier, and just looking at it is just so perplexing, but I just can't take my eyes off it.
I love to give people prescriptions for whatever movie watching mood they're in, because people will say, tell me what movie to watch. And one year I did Valentine's Day prescriptions. I was like, give me your Valentine's Day mood and I'll like give you a prescription. But I just think it has just occurred to me that like, if someone's like, I'm lonely and horny, mm-hmm. this is absolutely the perfect balm. And it's both of those things.
I thought that it was like a crime, like movie, like a cop movie. And it really isn't. Like it's a romance movie that it has some other stuff in it, but like the thing that you come for, and the thing that really, that stays with you, at least in my case, is the romantic stuff, which is just so, so good.
So steamy. I want to tag quickly back on what Emma said. Firstly, Colin Farrell in Minority Report, completely underrated, outstanding, like putting yourself on their map performance, because you have to credit one guy, the original pants man that is Joel Schumacher, who allegedly had 10 to 20,000 lays in his life. May he rest in peace, and he deserved it because he did some work while he was alive, ladies and gentlemen. But he cast Colin Farrell in Tigerland and then Phone Booth. And so he was like massive, like he was like literally shooting up in the rocket ship, about to hit sort of stratospheric levels. And I just remember also that time of seeing Colin Farrell, and I still watch that movie and I go, this guy doesn't realize, or maybe Spielberg just had him perfectly calibrated to go, I need you to look at Tom Cruise like he's nothing. Mm-hmm. And that energy has served him well in almost every part of his career, in that he's never the wallflower or pales in significance or machismo, or like, just, I don't know, whether it's like stature or posture against any other big, huge movie star. And that movie benefits so much from their clash and him not giving a single shit about Tom Cruise, and Tom Cruise getting to actually play off of someone who feels formidable. I love that in his role in that movie so much.
You really do get the sense, like this like dual sense of who the hell is this guy? Because like the character himself is that sort of guy who comes in, he's like this horrible like, you know, tech goblin rich kid with suspenders on, talking at Tom Cruise like, you're like, how dare you? And in your mind, like back then, you know, 2003 or whenever it was, you're like, who is this how can this actor come in? Yeah. You know who that is? Tom Cruise. And it's so perfect. And I was thinking about that tonight as well. It's just like, he can't be normal. Like even in a normal movie, he's weird. Like even in this movie where he's just playing a cop, but he has to have this hair and this mustache And these like shirts, the shirts, I do want to talk about the shirts.
Okay, good. We never covered the shirts.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. It. I just found the title of the episode. What? I do want to talk about the shirts with Emma Slifarski. That is happening. Mm-hmm. Please go on.
Amazing.
But yeah, but no, he can't be normal. And I think that's one of his greatest strengths. Like, he's one of those actors who's like, he's got that like weird guy trapped in a hot guy.
Yeah.
Like thing about him.
Yeah.
Like Jake Gyllenhaal is the same way. Like, he's really weird, but you think that he's just this boring, like hot dude, but no, there's like layers to him. Yeah. And I think Colin has the same thing going on, which is awesome.
It's really nice that there's like this corridor of people who started to arrive late 90s, early 2000s, who have sometimes been dismissed, but we've been able to like reappreciate and reappraise how good their weird choices are. Like, one person, especially now, you know, kind of like drawing the Venn diagram of how all these people intersect, is like Matthew Lillard recently, people talking about him and Scream with the new Scream movie coming up and being like, every fucking choice that guy makes in that movie is just 10 out of 10.
Oh, absolutely.
Perfection.
Yeah.
Like, that movie has no right to be that good. It's a 12 out of 10 movie. Scream 2 even is like an 11 out of 10 sequel. The rest of them, questionable. But Matthew Lillard, the weirdness, like leaning into every choice, like, my mom and dad are going to be so mad. Like, that's, I'm just like, this guy, and like when those characters go weird, and even Jake, as you said, Emma, I love him in Prisoners. One of my favorite, I mean, obviously Zodiac Chronicle, Zodiac and his amazing mm-hmm. performance as Robert Graysmith. Maybe one of my favorite performances ever. But him in Prisoners, the weird blinking, the choices, the affectations, the haircut, like yeah. everything, it's got a lot of Sonny Crockett, Miami Vice energy about every little weird choice I need to make this guy just higher, like, you know, just higher than everyone else in the room at every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's exactly, I mean, that's what movies like this, I think, kind of need to, is this guy that you can't really pin down.
Yes.
And yeah, that's what happens here, I think, as well.
I didn't realize, Blake, until just now that we have my boy Joel to thank for the Colin Farrell ascendance. I yes. love Joel Schumacher. I'm obsessed with Joel Schumacher.
He's your guy, dude.
He's my guy. And yeah. I'm like, finally in my late 30s, like admitting it. No, not that I'm not admitting it, but like, you know, it's like he was so looked down on for so long. But yeah, I watched Phone Booth last year when Joel Schumacher died. I did a whole like Joel marathon, and God, that movie's silly and great and perfect and like 89 minutes and chef's kiss.
And the Joel Schumachers of the world, you know, to allow a brief digression to praise the great pants man that is Joel Schumacher. but you could get The Lost Boys to be directed by, this is my test. You could get The Lost Boys, just get 10 minutes of the script directed by five different totally. Directors. And I guarantee you they would mostly be just rote garbage. But when Joel Schumacher directs it, it's outstanding.
Absolutely.
And in the best way possible, it may be one of the gayest mainstream film texts
yes.
that has ever existed.
And he has great taste in men. Thank you.
Exquisite taste in men. Exquisite, right? And so, yeah, no, I think The Lost Boys, you know, that's the best resume. Like depiction of someone's talent in a resume, like this script is pretty much crap. And the character conceptions are crap. It's all about the casting. It's all about his mood. It's all about the tone and how he balances that. And I think that Miami Vice has that too in spades, where like,
yes.
you could totally get the script and go, someone go shoot this movie. And it would just be terrible. Like some terrible, crappy episode of TV. Whereas this is like, a movie, a real weird and great and horny movie.
Yes. Well, just one quick little button on the Joel of it all, and then we can move on. It's just, I hosted a screening of Flatliners, and his first AD came. He was brought by his kids, and he said, Joel always said, no one ever paid $5 for under the top. So that is my, like, I want to get it tattooed or something. It's like, no one ever paid $5 for under the top. So that's what he was going for. Just giving you as much as possible. And it's interesting because I do think he has an eye for casting those kind of like hot weirdos as Colin Farrell is easily categorized.
I'm glad that the culture has come around on Joel, honestly. I think we needed that.
Yeah, totally. We should talk about the shirts.
We should.
If we can segue into the shirts.
Let's go. From Schumacher to shirts, it only makes sense.
I do like the thing about it is that like I do think that 2000s male fashion was a really dark time.
Yeah, it was.
It was nothing looked good. It just all was just sort of like, okay, I guess you're wearing a shirt and pants, but you're gonna have to convince me.
There's too many embellishments.
Right. And it's but everything in this just works really well. And I think it's probably a combination of a lot of things of like the weird, like off-putting digital cinematography stuff is kind of perfect for a movie made in 2006 where people spend a lot of time talking on their flip phones and wearing clothes that like I really, really hope never, ever, ever come back. But the shirts that these people wear, go ahead.
I was just remembering, you just brought back like a traumatic flashback.
I was going to say, I was like, Blake, can you share some photos with us?
Oh my God. It's like, what I was thinking is, how much can my shirt up top, can I look like Conor McGregor, but down low look like Mel Gibson from Lethal Weapon? Like just shit jeans, bad choice of shoes down below, and extremely flagrant, overly patterned excess up the top. And bad hair, sometimes with frosted tips. Don't judge me. Actually, please judge me. And it was all bad. Emma is spot on. It was all bad.
It's exactly what they wear. And I think it's probably, you know, it's like if no one's paying attention to like the pants and shoes that you're wearing, because like you're in dark clubs, right?
Yes.
And you're all like sweat. You're listening to Goldfrapp and weird music. No one's paying really any attention to anything in the early.
No one is going to look below the belt. It's just like, it's got to be, we don't want to look at anything. We can't look down. We're just going to walk through this mess of people like a shark and just get out of here.
It's interesting though, because I think like Colin's wearing a lot of like Cuban inspired clothing. Like he's wearing some guayaberas. He's got some linen flowy pants. You know, he's not zigging where the other guys are.
Right. And I think the one that always stands out to me is the like the turquoise one that he wears. He walks out of the kitchen in that like big, they're all big, but there's like one like teal shirt that he's on. And I just think of like, I can't stop thinking about how comfortable that must be just to like be hanging out. Like if I was ever like a drug, you know, cop looking for that, I would want to be posted in Miami because you get to wear the nice clothes and you get to like sort of chill all the time.
Yes.
In people's ridiculous houses on the beach.
Yeah. Your job is like you have to go on someone's yacht and learn some intel. You know?
Oh, what?
I have to fly this really cool plane like over this gorgeous like series of waterfalls.
Wow. Meanwhile, Jamie Foxx is like, no, hell no, I am not doing it. I'm terrified. Stop doing this to me, Michael Mann. I'd rather be stuck in a cab with Tom Cruise.
Can I be a cab nerd again, Michael, please? Just want to be a cab nerd. This is, you know, I'm just going to throw it out into the universe. Like, if there's ever a time that I'm allowed out of this country and back into America, and America is not warring with itself or other countries in a way that
we can make no promises.
And again, we'll make no promises. But man, I'd really like some oversized comfy shirts and a photo shoot with some of the guests on this show. Really would just make my dream come true for us all to be standing just like that shot of all the characters in Nicholas's apartment. I'm just like, maybe that's the dream. Really, that's as big as I dare to dream.
Linen pants for all.
Linen pants for all of us.
Yeah, a Miami Vice shirt party for your vicious return.
And what were you going to say about Nicholas?
The Nicholas apartment shot, that all of that in there, it's so bizarre to look at that stuff. And I know that you guys have probably talked about the cinematography before, but it honestly, I was thinking about like, what does this movie look like? And I genuinely can't come up with any sort of comparison because it's just, it doesn't look like anything, but all of that stuff kind of looks like, they look like a TikTok house. Like they look like YouTubers in like weird clothes, just sitting on like white leather furniture and yelling at each other.
This is a wrinkle we haven't explored. Maybe we need to get this clip and cut it and put it on TikTok because it's probably the bat signal. They have all watched Miami Vice 2006 and gone, that's the life I want to live.
This is it.
Well, but it also, all those like TikTok houses to me look like they not that I'm like observing a lot of TikTok houses, but
it's okay.
They all are very anonymous looking. Like I just walked in and it was already equipped with this white leather couch and this random stuff. Like no one's put any person, there's no family photos up. There's no, you know, personal touches. There's no house plants. It's like, Nicholas like just like walked into that place like 2 weeks ago and rented it, and that's just the stuff that came with the place. That's the sense that I get.
That's the house dressing. You hear about this in contemporary times, you know, when people are selling their house, they hire, you know, people who've got money, they hire people to dress their house for photos
to, like,
for the real
stage
estate.
It, yeah.
They stage it or, you know, dress it for a walkthrough, which is just, I don't know. I might just be a poor person, but that's lunacy to me. But anyway, I would just say that Nicholas's house feels like that. But what's funny is in that moment where they're all dressed in like kind of vibrant colors and they're all like an eclectic, you know, they're all beautiful and they're all kind of like fit and they kind of feel all of them out of place. And yeah. I always wonder, I love that shot. I'm like, who could actually live here? But Nicholas is so like, he just comes in, he throws all the takeout because it's just takeout, like whatever he's going to buy, like rubbish in his kitchen. And there's that one moment where they get the confirmation that they are going to go to Euro. And he's like on the phone, he's like, you know, you're good to go. They'll give you a call. And you see him alone in the apartment. And there's something about Eddie Marsan in that moment where I'm like, actually, Nicholas does kind of suit this trashy apartment to perfection. Like just the weird loungewear that he's wearing and the way he's draping himself on this white couch that doesn't look like it is comfortable at all. But the way he's kind of found a way to be comfortable on it, I'm like, man, that is him. That apartment is him. He is this complete vacuous, everything showy kind of guy. And when everyone else is in there, that's, I think you're spot on, Emmett. Like you're like, it doesn't feel like a real place that people could be.
He as a character feels like a person devoid of personal taste.
Yeah.
Like, especially with the comment, the guy is like, do you ever clean, like, do you ever put anything away? I think he says, and there's just like cups, like linings, the countertops and everything. But yeah, he absolutely just feels like a complete like blank. And that's what he does. He's so good. He's only in that movie for a few minutes, but it's always funny.
We're obsessed with him. We're obsessed with that performance.
Oh my God. It's so memorable.
But
when I was texting Sims through it, I think I texted him in all caps, Eddie Marsan, with like exclamation points. And then he's doing that act. Oh man.
The accent, we touched down upon it early on in this podcast, because to me, I think it is Foghorn Leghorn that he's doing. And Michael Mann on the commentary says it is an authentic Cajun accent. And I'm like, no,
it can come back on me, baby.
I'm like, that is an authentic Foghorn Leghorn accent. But I just love that scene. I love Eddie Marsan. I want like a one act play like set in that scene. Just them like roasting him and like threatening to beat him up. I mean, I think that would be great.
A Nicholas movie. Miami Vice 2, Nicholas.
Nicholas's revenge.
this is the like the ultimate tragedy. You know, I think the other day on Twitter, and this will be a marker for folks listening to know when we're recording, someone put up that like, put two pictures up to make a movie, right? And so, you know, to make
pitch
a movie in two pictures. And there were some fantastic ones that came out. One of my personal favorites, our friend of the show, Bilge Ibiri, put up Daniel Day-Lewis and a picture of the cover of Moby Dick. I'm like, that's mm-hmm. a great one. And Brandon Strasing, our friend of the show, was like, everyone else can stop because this wins. But someone did put up a picture of Colin and Jamie and then just this big neon two. And I was like, I was like, yeah, like that's actually the other answer that I'm okay with. And the shame of it is that I would love to see like Eddie Marzan, like he's kind of over a barrel in this scene. And you just know that if there was a two and it was like there was additional fallout or they were somewhere else in the country, you can just see Eddie Marzan being so mad at them because like they would have had to move him. Or like, they tried to kill me, baby. You know, like you just know, that you can just imagine a scene where he's like helping facilitate some kind of setup or give them some information and he has to rip into them about the previous movie. And I'm like, please, Lord, could we just do that? Like no more of these really gross people doing Robin Williams acting on YouTube. Just more of Eddie Marzan pretending that he's in a Miami Vice sequel.
Yes.
Please.
I second that. I think this needs to happen. I would watch that. I would watch just if they said, yeah, we're doing two and Eddie will be in it. Like, yep, sold.
Yeah. Yes.
I will produce this.
Yeah.
I have no money and I'll find it some way.
I think a sequel would be really fun I think it would be great to see Sonny like sober and cleaned up like as Colin is now and sort of trying to live his life that way, and then maybe, you know, Tubbs and Trudy are a little bit more domesticated. I mean, it would be really interesting, and then to bring everyone back. And I was just gonna say that I know there was a screening of Collateral and Thief at Beyond Fest, I think, mm-hmm. last week, and I did not get tickets to it. And I've never been more jealous, but someone tweeted that everybody in the Q&A was just standing up and telling Michael Mann, Miami Vice is a masterpiece. And he was like very confused. Like, what? And it was like right after Bilga's piece had come out. So I think it was just like on the brain. And so everyone was like asking him questions, being like, hey, Miami Vice is a masterpiece. And also, you know, asking the question, he was just like, what are you talking about?
What are all of you talking about?
But now maybe like the gears will start turning.
Yeah,
like little Miami Vice too.
We have to inception him into making a sequel.
Oh my god! Yeah, and look, I don't like this idea. I don't like this idea. Just what I'm going to say, but.
Okay.
HBO Max has now given Michael Mann money to executive produce and direct the first episode of this Tokyo Vice series, the adaptation from the book, and I'm just like, I don't like a direct to HBO Max thing, but if HBO Max has some money and people want to look at some guy who is amazing to direct a show with big stars who have done prestige television, maybe it's time. Like that whole gang, I'm sure they'd like some HBO Max money. That whole crew could get back together and do it. And I genuinely think there's something to be said about them having to be reassigned to do something else for their own protection for a chunk of time and then being able to come back, because it's like, because then it's good. A good distance of time is good, because it's like, you guys scorched the earth with Montoya. Like, we can't put you back undercover. We couldn't put you back undercover for a decade, but now we can. And it's like, yeah, baby, let's go. Like, let's let's do a HBO Max series, right? Like, you know, so anyway, that's the inception.
Wow, we've just pitched this whole thing. I mean, we should just put it right into development.
I've never done a Kickstarter for anything, but I would do it for this. Like, let's I'm gonna try and get Eddie Marzan on the phone right now. Let's get Eddie Marzan, because if we can film Eddie Marzan doing a Nicholas impression for 5 minutes, I mean, is he on Cameo? Is Eddie Marzan on Cameo?
He is on Twitter. He's rather spicy on Twitter, which is
fun. He really?
I don't know, maybe not spicy, but he like replies to people a lot. He's got a fun Twitter presence.
That's good.
I highly recommend him. He's an imp. Yeah, I stan Eddie Marzan. And like, that's what I love about this movie, is like, it's one of those casts where you're just like, oh my god, Justin Theroux, who like barely says anything this entire movie.
He just sort of looks pop-ish. Like he just sort of stands there and sort of like, he does his like eyebrow thing that he does and like holds pistols, and that's all he needs to do.
It's Justin Theroux and Dominic Lombardozzi are literally like, I need people who look like cops.
Yeah.
And they've just completely cast from I need people to look like cops. And also like, we can't have two guys, like we can't just directly cast out of The Wire, but we'll get one guy from The Wire and we'll get Justin Theroux, who kind of looks like a cop in this movie, which is just brilliant. But no, that's the kind of like eccentric greatness of this movie is so much about the eclectic a bunch of supporting roles, especially the ones that come in for kind of thankless 2 seconds or whatever, like John Hawkes, icon, like that scene, amazing. Marzen, like 2 scenes, amazing. You know, Jose becomes like a huge character in it, but like those bits that you get these huge performers that usually are stars in their own movies to come in for like 3 seconds. I think that's a Michael Mann magic and big director, you know, commanding magic where you can just get someone to cameo for like, because they want to work with that director again for a day, you know, like it's so unusual to get, like, again, in the language of this podcast, productions like Xander Berkeley coming in for Ralph in Heat is such a flex, like for a, for like 10 seconds to be yelled at by Al Pacino and then leave. And he was the villain in LA Takedown. He was Wangro, and he comes in to be...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. Ralph in the movie, you know, like that's so good. That's just totally. As good as it gets.
It really, it makes you kind of sit up in your seat a little bit, and at yes. like the perfect time. So like he really deploys these actors yes. at the right point where you're just like, oh, okay, wait, hold on. I was going to go get a drink, but now I can't because I have to keep watching this.
Yeah. He does it in Collateral too. Like that's such a deep cast. And I mean, all of his movies have such deep, amazing cast.
Who's in Collateral in the cab at the beginning? Is it Debbie Mazur? I think it's Debbie Mazur
an argument. She's in it for like a minute.
She's having an argument with her boyfriend in the back of the cab. And I'm like, Debbie Mazur was like in The Insider and was amazing. Like she's part of Lowell Bergman's whole 60 Minutes crew. She's an amazing actor in her right. And she's literally in for 30 seconds and it prompts Jamie Foxx's like nerdy driver to like pull Max to pull down his visor and look at his like picture of the island to sort of travel away because he's hearing
because they're arguing about something. Yeah.
Yeah. So great.
What else is is it about Miami Vice that sort of struck you? Like, what else were you texting Sims?
Oh gosh, what was I texting Sims? I mean, the fact that it's so it's sort of off-putting and alienating to look at. But I don't like it, the filming techniques that he uses and that I guess probably the camera that he's using and the fact that he's like doing it, a lot of it is handheld, makes this like weird blur effect happen whenever the camera really moves around, tries to like follow a few things at once. And you just sort of, you kind of jerk back and you don't really like to look at that, but, and yet it's still really, really fun to watch because you're always sort of like, you're put off balance by the very first second of it. And you're just sort of, you're kind of constantly trying to claw your way back into like, okay, maybe I'm with this movie now. And then it does something else weird. And you're just like, okay, wait, I have to do all that work yet again. Which sounds not fun, but it is, you know, actually a very interesting way of watching a movie that I've never actually felt before or since. So that's pretty cool.
I love you talk about that. Cause it is like destabilizing, right? To consistently be trying to stay focused on what they're looking at. Like you feel like also it's quite intuitive with like a character looks and is doing something off screen and then we catch up every time. And so it does have that feeling you're kind of being pulled along and you're just like always one half second behind. And that is, yeah, that I love what you said there, because it is, that's something that is just in the formal quality of the movie, where it's just like, I just want to be a half step behind everything that they're doing to keep the audience like in their control, because we're obviously following them, but also a little bit have that air of unpredictability on it almost as you're going through. I think that that's a really great formal choice.
Yeah. It's another way that it like holds your attention too, because you're like, I've never seen anything like this. I don't know. It's not teaching me how to watch it like a lot of other movies will do. And it's also not something that I'm used to watching. So I don't really know what's going to happen next. I can't get into that comfort zone where I'm like, okay, I get it. Sure, I'll just sort of let it wash over me. Like, that's never possible with this movie. And I really appreciate that, especially now that, like, you know, I'm one of those people who's cursed with like a very short attention span, just because there's all kinds of stuff happening all the time. And that's a very euphemistic way of putting it, but there's just all this stuff happening all the time. But, you know, like, I'll watch a movie at home and I'll be looking at my phone sometimes. I really can't do it with this movie, which I think is a huge strength of it, is just like, it really demands your attention. And it also doesn't really reward you for that either, because you're constantly like, you can't relax into it.
Yeah. And I think like some of the crime plot does that too, in terms of like kind of moving along and you sort of have to catch up. You know, the John Huck scene happens and you're like, wait, who is this guy? Oh, he's their informant. And you're like behind, trying to catch up as they're having these conversations. And I love that you're also, that sort of sensation is also being reflected in the like alien beauty or whatever of like the digital photography. And yeah, you think about how they're shooting entirely at night, and it's like, are these cameras capturing too much light or not enough light? Like, it's not a perfect crisp image, but it's putting you in that state that they are in, you know, maybe trying to play catch up, or these like weird almost lo-fi surveillance cameras or something. It gives that sense of that, of the place that they're in.
It feels like you're watching footage kind of cobbled together from a bunch of different perspectives. Yes. Like that weird grainy texture is never the same shot to shot. Like, it's all, you're like you're watching like a dash cam, and then you're watching like someone's flip phone, like horrible quality, and then you're watching like some night vision goggle thing. Like, it's all weird, but I think it completely works as well, like in a really unexpected and unpredictable way.
In recently, No Sudden Move, Soderbergh's really terrific, you know, twisty crime film that came to HBO Max. He was using this special sort of fisheye lens camera. And I think that was one recently that kind of, it actually did teach you. Now I was sort of reflecting on, like, it did teach you how to watch it, because it had sort of these stable shots at the beginning where it had this kind of weird fisheye lens that kind of opened up the space of the room in a way that you kind of potentially weren't expecting. And every space had this sort of quality. And then it starts to move, and on the edges of the frame, it's like, it takes this almost like aquarium quality where like it all refracts and it goes a bit weird and you're like, oh, what? Wait, this is moving? What the hell? But it maintains focus in the center. And I love how you said, like, Miami Vice does not care that you haven't learned how to watch it at any point. It's like, all right, here's the Universal logo. Hard cut. Like, it's just like, it doesn't give a shit. And so that's probably one of those things. It's almost like they say especially when you maybe renting an apartment or whatever, it's like, you should not try and, you know, buy all the same matching furniture, because you're matching it to an apartment that maybe you don't own, or you don't, you know, whatever. So it's like, the better to have eclectic taste. And I feel like that Michael Mann has like got that in his formal taste. It's like, all right, it doesn't matter, all these textures, all these weird ISOs to get the color right in all these different environments, I'm just going to play with it and we're going to see how it goes. And that's it.
Yeah. And I think in Bilge Beery's really, really great piece for Vulture about this movie, he quoted Mann saying, there's a quote from him where he was explaining like why it looks the way that it does. And I think, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said something about like, he compared it to when we started using steel beams to make buildings. And what we were doing was we were basically just making bigger versions of what we already had, even though we could really do whatever we wanted. And there wasn't like, we were sticking to some formula where it wasn't really necessary. And he was comparing that to like digital filming, filmography, and saying like, there, you know, it doesn't have to look like everything else needs to look.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look similar to what you've already seen. Like we're here with this totally new technology of making a movie. It can look as weird as you want it to look because you can use this thing in ways that you couldn't use this other thing.
Yeah, I appreciated him saying that and making that analogy. Like, we have a new technology. We can do the possibilities are endless. And I think that's always been the case with cinema and video and any sort of technology in terms of cinema. It's like, we can do whatever we want. So we don't have to film a stage play because that's theater. Yeah. What if we cut and edit and change the time and go a little bit closer to something? And that's like the essence of cinema. And I think that transitioning from 35 millimeter film cameras to digital, it's like he's really playing with, and it sounds like, so I haven't seen No Sudden Move, but it sounds like, you know, and I know Soderbergh is another one who's constantly playing with form, and maybe it's off-putting or alien or doesn't look the way we expect a movie to look. But maybe it's like there are new possibilities, and there are, you know, this digital photography in Miami Vice, like, not only creates a sense of like what their story is, which is all about sort of surveillance and maybe a flip phone or like a little hidden camera or something, and then also this sort of like nightmarish world that they're living in.
There's this deep sense of like paranoia that you feel throughout the entire movie, just simply by looking at it, that I think really is like the perfect way to film a story like this, where like everything that's happening is really weird. Like even the happy, like nice stuff is, there's, you know, there's obviously, there's like an expiration date to that, or something horrible could happen to one of these people. There's always like the threat of danger, or of, you know, people spying on people, like people knowing too much about people. It's the perfect like segue from into like a digital surveillance age that I think was like honestly very prescient.
Yes.
So the one thing I really like about Soderbergh recently, and he's probably changed a little bit more with my along his journey as a filmmaker, because so much, you know, he's a cinematographer under a pseudonym and all that sort of stuff as well, because he's basically the everyman at all of his crews. But he's kind of retroactively gone back to this quality. I read a great piece where he was like, if you do something different than a standard two shot, when the movie doesn't need something different than a standard two shot, like, you kind of have to convey to me why you're doing something different, because otherwise you're kind of muddying up storytelling, trying to be overly inventive, and it doesn't need it. Like, the story, it really has to complement the story. And I think we're all in agreement that, like, if you're dealing with like these guys who are on one night dealing with prostitutes, like just a guy who's running prostitutes, and then like 2 weeks later are dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars of international like drug and weapon and potentially human trafficking on a scale that is exponentially larger than anyone thought, as opposed to just like a white power gang in Miami. I think that the stakes should be like heightened paranoia, like consistently acting with all this bluster and confidence. Like, this is one line we haven't talked about, but Emma reminded me. It's like when Colin as Sonny says to Rico, why does it feel like everyone knows who we are 10 blocks out? And Rico says,
yeah,
because everyone knows who we are 10 blocks out. It's like, that's this movie's essence. Why does everyone know what's happening 10 blocks out? Because they do. Like, we're actually catching up. And I love the kind of bluster for them to still act so confidently in every scene, even though that is completely what they're aware of, is just so cool. Like, I can't get enough of that in this movie.
But that confidence is like what keeps them alive.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You're spot on.
Yeah.
It's the complete opposite of like James Bond, who tells everyone that he's James Bond within 5 seconds of meeting them.
Yeah.
You guys can't do that.
I'm Sonny Crockett. I mean, Bennett. I mean,
yeah. You might have watched a TV show that I was in.
I do not have a crocodile on my boat. Yeah, so did you watch all the TV show? Like, how did you watch how did you get into the show?
I haven't seen all of it. I watched a lot of it in college because I had my freshman hall had this really eclectic mix of people. You know how they sometimes like they'll assign you based on like, I don't know, they'll see like what you like and they'll kind of put you with people. My hall was just, it was like where they put the people that they couldn't figure out where else to put them. Just a bizarre group. And there was one guy who was like really into it and he had Miami Vice nights.
Nice.
Go to his room.
A man after our own heart. What a legend.
It was so good. And I was always sort of like, and that was when I was like really way pickier about what I watched movies and TV wise than I am now. Now I'll just watch whatever. And I was like, I don't know. I've never really been into like cop shows. And he was like, no, it's not. It's not what you think. It's different. And he was right. It was really, it's just like, yeah. There's never going to be a show like that ever again. I just really love it.
That's hilarious that there's like a 18-year-old freshman being like, I'm having Miami Vice nights.
I had my first mojito in that room.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mojitos?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my goodness. And what's so hilarious, he was acting like Crockett and Tubbs, like extreme confidence at 18. Emma, this is like no show you've ever seen before. Like full on confident. He's like, that's as did you get your tan in Miami as anyone's yes. energy could be.
Exactly.
This is not like any show you've seen before. What a legend. Hey, shout out to that guy. Whoever that guy is. I hope you listen to this show because we're your friends.
I hope he watched the movie. I'm curious what his thoughts are on the movie.
Yeah, I didn't think to ask him. Maybe I should.
No, it's okay.
Try to find him again and
shoot him a Facebook message for us.
Miami Vice 2006 nights. You know, so he just watches it. So, very good.
That's our podcast.
Yeah. That's what this show is.
Yeah.
So Emma, I have to ask, cause you know, you're across so much different stuff since you've watched Miami Vice the first time, and other than the ramp up for this, have you been inclined to go back and watch Man stuff again or watch Miami Vice again? Because I think that's something that we're finding with some of the sort of in these podcast confessionals is that people like watch Miami Vice once and then they're like, I need to like throw that on pretty regularly, even if it's just a white noise in my house while I'm doing other things. Like, have you found yourself going back to it?
I did. I did. I rewatched it today. I've rewatched it since, I think at least once, if not twice. It's on like, I think it's on Stars or something like that. So it's like easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to just sort of throw it on. And I do find that it really lends itself to rewatch really well because there's always, it's sort of like the Lord of the Rings movies in that like there's always something you missed before that you can like appreciate this time around. And I think today, what was I paying attention to? Maybe today was the day that I finally figured out what was going on with the plot because I definitely didn't.
Yes.
I didn't follow that the first time. But I think today I was watching like eye contact, like characters looking at each other and sharing thoughts, which is something that I really appreciate in film, especially when you can kind of have actors do that and have that be a little bit of dialogue, even if they're not saying anything.
Mm.
And Colin Farrell and Gong Li do that a few times, like on the boat when they look at each other and you just like, I can't, oh my God. You're feeling the heat come off the TV. And then he and Jamie
that
Foxx.
That scene is like opening an oven door. Like you just go, whoa, like you don't realize how hot you've got a roast in the oven and you're like opening, you're like, God, it only takes your eyebrows off that scene. It's just insane.
When she's like, I'm a businesswoman. And then he like revs the boat engine and like, it's so funny.
Yeah, I it's funny because I think one thing that I love on rewatch is like everybody's line readings and then being like, oh yeah, I love the way he says this or that, or like a lot of John Ortiz's line readings are really great. Or, and that's what I think is makes Scream so rewatchable to me. Call back to Matthew Lillard is like all of, whether it's especially Matthew Lillard, but whether it's like Skeet Ulrich or Jamie Kennedy, like all those line readings, Rose McGowan, like it's just like you get that hit again of little pleasure. And I find that with Miami Vice too. I just love all the different performances and yeah. And like the eye contact and you're just going, oh my God, like that moment where they see each other and you know, just like enjoying it again and knowing that it's coming and also being happily surprised by things that you didn't pick up the first time.
And the dialogue is so weird too, because like when they're initially flirting with each other, she asks him, she's like, how fast does the boat go? And he goes, it goes very fast. And that's the flirt.
I know.
It's bizarre, but it's so good.
Yeah. The first time I saw this movie, I was like totally like laughing my ass off at the dialogue. Yeah. Sorry, Blake.
No, I was just gonna say, just to do the final connection between Scream and Miami Vice is that like everyone, any of you film Twitter bros out there want to be Colin Farrell in this movie, but so many of them, thanks to Kevin Williamson, like defining what it is, the worst film bro boyfriends. You're all Skeet Ulrich. I'm sorry, guys. You're all Billy Loomis. You're all that creep who's like, oh, I know it sucks your mom died, but like, let's have sex. Like that's all of you that I'm seeing online.
Hey, at least Skate is hot, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can have that. You can have the hotness.
No, they're all Jamie Kennedy.
No, I love Jamie Kennedy. He's a sweetie pie.
Well, try to be Jamie Kennedy.
Try to be more Jamie Kennedy than Billy Loomis. Can we agree on that?
Yeah.
No, but that's what's so funny is like on paper, if you're reviewing the script and you're like, this is a, you know, maybe the description is this is, you know, and for folks who've never actually read a script, it's actually sometimes fun to see what screenwriters explain. Some screenwriters are very stark in their scripts. They kind of like let the script talk for itself and the characterizations or the mood or the tone really comes out in the dialogue. So there's not a lot of explanation, but other screenwriters, depending on their style, are very specific about the music beats that are playing, what's happening between the characters at that moment. And I'd really love, and I might try and get my hands on it, is like, what's written around that?
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to see, because I feel like Michael Mann's an intuitive enough filmmaker to be like, this is the scene that's like dripping with sex appeal and it has nothing written there. Like, you know what I mean? Like it goes very fast. And like Colin Farrell, like just going, like, especially the way he sort of tilts his head down, looks up, it goes very fast. And you're like, I still can't believe he asked her on a date there.
Yeah.
Then here's your drugs. Let's go on a date. And also I'm going to Cuba. What is going on? Yeah, it's brilliant. Like again, so much of this movie, what you say on paper is not what is there. Like it's almost like when people are reading text messages and you're like, what is the tone?
The tone
is absent. And I think there is a reading to this movie that if you're not like jiving with it, that all you're getting is like that text. You're like, this text is dumb. And you're like, but actually, yeah. And all the people who love it, it's like, yeah, so for any other movie, it is, but it's so much more important to show the filmmaking chops. That is not a play. It's not, you know, it's not a book. It's not a, you know, it's not like a script that needs to necessarily be held up. It is totally a fusion of all those other things that make movies great that actually makes it work.
It's so far from like live, something live that as you could possibly get, I think is like it's not even, the film itself isn't even substantial. Like it's completely, it's bits and bytes on a computer. It's weird. Yeah.
I have to say, because I was going to save this for another episode, but I really want to do it now. We've been getting, thanks to that wonderful Bill Gabieri article, we've been getting some wonderful correspondence from people recently about the show. And because it was shirt related, I was wondering if I could read this correspondence out with Emma here indeed. So this is from a German listener, Thomas. And he wrote, big fan of Miami Vice, just discovered Miami Nice. And he's like, I've heard the online, heard and read about the online rumors in Florida. And he's like, but the final scene with Crockett entering the hotel, he says he's not wearing the striped black and gray shirt that he's wearing in a previous scene. He's wearing a black jacket, which lends him to think that he's actually, it's another scene that they cut to make it the ending of the movie that wasn't part of the original concept because of what had happened. And he sent me the German trailer as evidence that that's maybe the case. So I will definitely post that up on socials on 1 Minute Pods,
yeah,
on, at OHM Pods. I'm going to tag Emma, Katie, and I in it so you can see it because it is German dubbed and this trailer is chef's kiss. It is beautiful. And it does have some extra scene. It does have some scenes from the director's cut in there, like the Trudy Flower scene is part of the trailer. So if you guys, maybe just his 2 cents, maybe it's been observed, but I just wanted to say thank you to Tomasz for listening to the show, number one, and two, pointing out that he's very keen observations of the shirts, Emma, was actually what tipped his hat. And I was like, maybe this is just that one thing that I would love to check out and hear your opinion on. Some good, maybe for the next watch for all three of us.
Yeah, we'll have to do like a shirt list.
What are the shirts?
Release the shirts cut. Yes. I honestly am dying to see the German dub trailer for this movie. God. What would this movie be like in German? It would be even weirder.
I know.
And I speak German, so I can say that.
Oh my God. I'm
weird cinema. This is the icon of weird cinema.
I normally we would wrap this up. But what I'm going to do really quickly, because I want to hear Emma's reactions. So I'm going to keep recording and I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to play it for us to watch it together. Cause okay. I'm so excited for you both to see it. Just give me 1 second and I'm going to get this ready to share.
Incredible.
All right, guys, live on Miami Nice is the German 2006 dubbed trailer. Here we go. 1 second.
Everyone, cue it up. Cue it up right now.
Cue it up.
Watch it along.
It will be in the list. It will be in the list. Just sharing the screen right now. Just making sure that we're sharing the sound, sharing computer sound. Okay. Oh my goodness. I'm going to watch your faces while we watch this together. Maybe take a couple of screenshots. Here we go.
Verdeckte Ermittler brauchen einen Hang zur Aggression und Gesetzesuntreue.
Wollen wir?
Wir wollen.
Das FBI wird weder erfahren, was meine Jungs tun, noch wie sie es tun.
Locker. Ganz locker.
This is so weird.
Jesus Montoya, kolumbianischer Kokainproduzent.
Was schwebt euch vor?
Wir beleuchten Montoyas Netzwerk von innen. Wisst ihr, wer das ist?
Wait, who is doing Colin's voice?
Gegenseitig ganz schnell die Lichter ausknipsen. Aber dann macht hier niemand Geld.
Sei vorsichtig.
Das Ding steigt.
6 Millionen. Das ist der Deal.
Wie wär's mit einem anderen Deal?
Good trailer.
Yeah.
It's cut really well.
Die Amerikaner kennen mich nicht.
Look, they're standing up in the boat in that car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Die baggern uns gegenseitig an.
Angst vor Gewalt.
Not sure about the casting.
The Colin voice actor is very interesting. He's in Soma.
Danke für die
Blumen. Was für Blumen?
See?
Yeah.
Danke für die Blumen.
Dinge laufen schief. Das Schicksal holt einen ein.
This is the best trailer I've ever seen.
It's a really good trailer.
In so einem Turbo.
Yes, limo scene.
Wo Gefühle im Spiel sind, sterben die Falschen.
Fire. So good.
Wait, they also have the boat race.
They've got the boat race. Trudy is holding a shotgun in an apartment. They're standing up in the boat. We're seeing the flower scene from the director's cut. It is a fire trailer. Like, it is a badass trailer.
It's a really good trailer. The Colin voice really threw me, though.
It's
That's
so
better
good.
Than most trailers I've seen, honestly.
Honestly.
This.
Okay. Wow. So, well, look, that was... maybe one of my favorite 3-minute segments that we've ever done on this show. Looking at Emma and Katie's face, watch that. I was so distracted. I was so torn. I'm watching the trailer and I'm watching their faces, and it was just the best thing in my whole life. So I think maybe that's the time for us to sign up. Emma, as a huge fan of yours, it's such a pleasure, A, to meet you. B, it's been so fun to read your stuff and listen to you on, we've talked about Sims and the Blankies. So it's been so great. You're amazing. This was so much fun. Katie, holy shit. Your stalking of Letterboxd for Miami Nice, Miami Vice Reviews has paid off.
Yes, it
tenfold.
Has.
Tenfold. This is an amazing. Thank you so much for being part of Miami Nice. It's been a treat to talk to you.
Oh my God, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. This was really cool. And I love to talk about this movie. So this was really fun.
Oh, the awesome. Best.
Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.